headlines, Iran's president says cooperation among independent countries is the strongest response to the policy of sanctions and destabilization pursued by the U.S. The U.K. says that it will step up support for the Ukrainian forces through winter by supplying Kiev with 1,000 additional surface-to-air missiles. And Russia slammed some UN members for accusing Moscow of threatening to use nukes in Ukraine, saying that there can be no winner in a nuclear war. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumish Ahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Iran's president says cooperation among independent countries is the strongest response to the policy of sanctions and destabilization pursued by the U.S. and its allies. Ebrahim Raisi made the remarks in a meeting with a visiting secretary of Russia's Security Council, Nikolai Patrushev, stressing that Iran's principled policy is to oppose war. Iran's president said that the spread and escalation of war is a cause for concern for all countries. The Russian official, for his part, called for further expansion of political trade, energy, and transit cooperation between Tehran and Moscow. He added that a creation of a multipolar world will benefit all countries. Iran's foreign minister says Tehran's principled and unwavering policy is to end the Ukraine war through political means and will continue its efforts in this regard. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made these comments in a phone call with his Italian counterpart. He also praised Italy's condemnation of recent terrorist attacks on a holy shrine in the Iranian city of Shiraz. Over a dozen people, including women and children, were killed in the Daesh-claimed attack in the southern city in late October. Amir Abdullahian urged the international community to fulfill its responsibility in countering the ominous phenomenon of terrorism. The Italian foreign minister, for his part, highlighted Iran's role in promoting peace and stability in West Asia. He also called for further expansion of all-out relations between the two countries. German journalist Selina Lipp is facing 3 years in prison in her home country for covering the crimes committed by Ukrainian forces against civilians. As our correspondent Johnny Miller finds out, German authorities are also persecuting Alina's mother simply for being her mother.
This is Petra Bas Lipp. She is the mother of Alina Lipp, a journalist whom the German government is trying to imprison due to her reporting in Donbass. Like her daughter, she has fled Germany to Crimea due to persecution. The government recently arbitrarily closed her bank account.
First her bank account, then her father's bank account, and last mine. So, yeah.
And what does that do, closing down your bank account?
What does it... You must imagine, you can't buy your food anymore, you can't pay your rent, you can't pay your insurance, you can pay nothing from one moment to the other. So, what to do?
And the German, there was no legal decision over this, there was no court case. They just didn't even tell you, they just shut it down.
No, they didn't tell me. No, nothing.
And how did you survive?
Yeah, I'm a creative person. I had some money, of course. I'm lucky, some cash. And they told me I can go to the church and to tell my story.
So the state told you that? The state told you to go to the church?
No, my bank officer told me that. Because I asked him, what shall I do now? And he told me, oh, maybe you can go to the church.
The German government is still attempting to imprison Alina Lipp for her work in Donbass. Now, I've seen the court documents, and the reasons they give are that Alina has reported that Ukraine has been killing its own people in Donbass for 8 years, and that the majority of people there support Russia. Now, these are two undeniable facts. Perhaps the most worrying aspect of this case is that her court order effectively criminalizes honest reporting in Ukraine. Because if you're a journalist, mainstream or otherwise, or a political figure, and you want to point out these two very important facts, you risk going to jail. raising questions about Germany's ability to make sensible policies on Ukraine.
As they see the Elena as an enemy of their narrative, her message as a threat, they want to make Elena's moves impossible by blocking the financial capability and creating a psychological pressure. They are distorting her focus out from the things what she were doing before, and I mean seeking the truth and telling the truth to the German audience, and that is their target. And when they are succeeding of disturbing her job, then they think that they are winning the battle.
While WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange languishes in a British jail, and French journalist Adrien Bouquet recently survived an assassination attempt in Turkey, he suspects by the Ukrainian SBU. For Alina and her mother, it's exile. The threat to Western journalists who challenge the mainstream with uncomfortable truths is growing. Johnny Miller, Crimea.
Britain says it will step up support for Ukrainian forces through the winter as they make new advances towards the southern city of Kherson. Defense Secretary Ben Wallace made the comments after the UK announced the delivery of 12,000 more extreme cold weather sleeping kits for Ukraine. Wallace later added that Britain would soon complete the delivery of 1,000 additional surface-to-air missiles to Ukraine's armed forces. The package includes launchers and missiles and is capable of shooting down air targets, including Russian drones and cruise missiles. London's support for Kiev comes as Western countries, topped by the U.S., have provided military supplies to Ukraine worth billions of dollars. Russia has said time and again that continued supply of Western weapons and military equipment to Kiev will only prolong the war. Russia's UN representative has hit back at a number of member states for accusing Moscow of threatening to use nuclear weapons in the Ukraine war.
In response to unfounded accusations that Russia is allegedly threatening the use of nuclear weapons during the conduct of a special military operation in Ukraine, we would like to once again underscore that Russia's doctrine in this area is purely defensive in nature and does not allow any extended explanation.
Shevchenko added that there can be no winner in a nuclear war and it should never be unleashed. He was addressing a UN General Assembly session. President Vladimir Putin has vowed to use all of Russia's resources to defend its people and territory in the war between Moscow and Kiev. Western countries have been claiming, without providing any evidence, that Putin's comments mean that Moscow is planning to use nuclear weapons. Russia orders its troops to withdraw from the southern Ukrainian city of Kherson, which it has been controlling since the early days of the war. During a televised meeting, the defense minister called the measure a difficult decision in order to, quote, save the lives of Russian soldiers and their fighting capacity. He said the move followed a proposal by the commander of Russian operations in Ukraine to pull back from Kherson and set up defenses on the left bank of the Dnipro River. That, however, comes as Ukrainian forces have been advancing for weeks to reclaim the strategic city. Meanwhile, officials in Kiev say it is too early to speak about the Russian troop pullout. A senior advisor to Ukraine's president says talking about a withdrawal makes no sense until the Ukrainian flag is flying over Kherson. A number of Palestinian rights groups have slammed Israel for its decision to outlaw them as terrorist organizations, followed by the closure orders and raids on their offices. The head of one of the rights bodies told UN investigators that the regime's move was like an execution designed to stop them from probing abuses.
A United Nations Independent Commission of Inquiry has begun public hearings on the human rights violations in the occupied Palestinian territories. Israel has harshly criticized the hearings while refusing to cooperate with the team. One of the subjects of the rare public hearings is Tel Aviv's designation of six Palestinian rights groups as terrorist organizations, followed by closure orders and raids on their offices last year. The move targeted such NGOs as Adamir Prisoner Support and Human Rights Association, the legal aid human rights group Al-Haq, Defense for Children International Palestine, Union of Agricultural Work Committees, Bisan Center for Research and Development, and the Union of Palestinian Women's Committees. The heads of three of the rights bodies took to the floor saying Israel had justified the move with a secret file and had provided no real evidence against them. The head of Al-Haq Rights Group told the UN investigators that Tel Aviv's designation of Palestinian civil society groups as terrorist bodies was like an execution designed to stop them from probing abuses by Israel. This could be referring to Israel's long-time exception from accountability before the UN and other international organizations, despite the regime's deadly atrocities against Palestinians. The head of Al-Haq Rights Group also described the designation and subsequent closure of NGOs as an arbitrary decision, saying Israeli forces had used mafia methods against them. Meanwhile, director of Ad-Damir Prisoner Advocacy Group said a systematic attack against the human rights defenders is ongoing by Israel. The hearings, which have been harshly criticized by Israel, will also address the killing of Al Jazeera journalist Shirin Abu Akleh, who was shot in the head by Israeli forces while on assignment in the occupied West Bank in May.
Israel has for decades been documented killing and maiming journalist Shirin Abu Akleh as the latest in a long list of Palestinian reporters killed by Israeli forces. Israeli authorities have led an unprecedented crackdown on journalists attempting to cover the regime's crimes against Palestinians.
Leading human rights groups have equated Israeli policies against Palestinians to apartheid, and Palestinians have slammed the regime's move to designate human rights groups as terrorist organizations, saying the move is an unlawful decision and a flagrant violation of international law. However, the Israeli regime's efforts to silence and prevent the factual press image from being conveyed to the world are continuing unabated. The UN and Committee to Protect Journalists have documented 17 Palestinian reporters being killed since 2000. This does not include Shirin Abu Akleh or several other journalists killed from other countries, including two Italians, one Turk, and a Welshman. However, the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate says the number is far higher. Israeli forces have beaten and fired live ammunition on reporters covering the unfolding on events in the occupied territories. Additionally, Israeli airstrikes on Gaza destroyed a building that housed a number of media offices during the bombardment of Gaza last year. Rejecting a probe into human rights violations, killing and maiming reporters, and destroying media headquarters. Aren't these enough reasons to prove Israel is guilty of committing heinous crimes, but it's still trying to hide them?
Tehran has once again issued a stern warning to Riyadh over fomenting riots in the country through Saudi-funded media. Intelligence Minister Ismail Khatib said Iran has adopted strategic patience with firm rationality, but it cannot guarantee that it will not run out of hostility if hostility continues. Khatib said that if Iran decides to retaliate and punish, quote, glass places will crumble and those countries behind the riots will not experience stability anymore. Khatib was referring to activities by the Saudi-backed Persian-language TV network Iran International over the recent unrest in the country. Tehran has declared the channel a terrorist organization whose agents will be prosecuted by the intelligence ministry. The Islamic Republic has long urged Riyadh to control its media outlet. Iran's new version of indigenously made missile defense system Bavar 373 is capable of hitting targets just 5 minutes after fire. Asama Kujuri reports the missile system has made Iran among the only five countries in the world with such a highly sophisticated technology.
Iran has recently unveiled the newest version of its homegrown missile defense system, Bavar 373, which is said to have taken one step closer to the Russian-made S-400 anti-aircraft weapon system. During the test fire, a stationary target was detected at a range of more than 450 kilometers by the optimized radar of the missile system and was tracked at a range of about 405 kilometers and was hit at a range of more than 300 kilometers. The long-range missile has solid fuel and was evaluated during operation for the first time. The detection radar range of the Bavar 373 system has increased from 350 to 450 kilometers, and its engagement radar range has increased from 260 to 400 kilometers. The Bavar 373 long-range air defense system is capable of detecting up to 100 targets, tracking 60 of them and engaging with 6 concurrently.
All air defense systems are divided into 3 main categories based on their missions and operations, including long-range, middle-range, and short-range systems. Bavar 373 is a long-range missile system. Only 4 or 5 countries in the world have the technology to manufacture such a strategically important missile system. These countries do not even allow other countries to master such a technology, and if they provide any country with such a missile system, they will operate and overhaul the systems themselves, and operational and communicational codes are not given to the using country.
A distinguishing feature of Bavar 373 is its vertical launching system with square launchers, mostly used for air defense on warships. The system's missile range has increased from 200 to 300 kilometers, and its engagement altitude has increased from 27 to 32 kilometers.
The great achievement which has been made as a result of the production of Bavar 373, aside from its defensive goals, is that this project has institutionalized the path of developing anti-aircraft air defense system inside the country. It means that we're now highly capable of producing any form of anti-air defense system inside the country with the help of our own universities, startup companies, and Iranian youth and specialists. By using Bavar 373 missile system, we can counter different types of missiles, bombers, and ballistic missiles.
The Bavar air defense system employs 3 different types of missiles to hit targets at various altitudes. It's been able to hit targets just 5 minutes after fire at an altitude of 43,000 feet.
Iran maintains that its military might poses no threat to regional countries, stressing that the Islamic Republic's defense doctrine is entirely based on deterrence. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. In the United States, Republicans and Democrats are making their last arguments with the midterm elections about to start. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. U.S. political leaders from both sides of the aisle on Sunday, 6th of November, made their closing arguments to voters just 2 days before the hotly contested midterm elections, with several top Democrats framing the election as a referendum on American democracy. President Joe Biden accused Republicans of reveling in political violence, saying hundreds of the party's candidates for state, federal, and local office were election deniers, who say that I did not win the election, even though hundreds of attempts to challenge this in a court of law have failed, even in Republican courts of law. Joe Biden said that for them, there are only two outcomes for any election. Either they win or they were cheated. He said Republicans were willing to condone the 2021 insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, and that after a recent attack on Paul Pelosi, husband of the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, some in the party made light of it or were making excuses. There's never been a time in my career when we've glorified violence based on a political preference, Joe Biden said. President Biden made the comment as he wrapped up a five-state, four-day campaign tour with a Sunday evening rally at a college in Yonkers, New York, where he championed the Democratic governor, Kathy Hochul. Kathy Hochul is locked in a tight race with Lee Zeldin, who is looking to become the state's first GOP governor since 2006. Republicans, meanwhile, swung back by saying that they would better address Americans' economic woes and repeatedly insisted their rivals were ill-equipped to help voters despite Democratic rhetoric that the Republicans were to blame for the nation's political divisiveness. Donald Trump stayed evasive on a 2024 presidential run, saying, "I will probably have to do it again, but stay tuned." Teasing an event he has with Republican Senate candidate in Ohio, J.D. Vance, for Monday. Donald Trump added, "We have a big, big rally. Stay tuned for tomorrow night." Trump appeared in Miami, Florida, late on Sunday in support of Florida's Republican Senator Marco Rubio, who is seeking another term in office on Tuesday. The former president mocked leftist politicians, promoted his Truth Social platform, and predicted a Republican-controlled Congress would target a number of culture war issues dear to Florida, including critical race theory. "The stakes are about economics," Minnesota Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar said on CNN's State of the Union program. Klobuchar added, "Every country in the world has been through a hard time coming out of this pandemic. The question that voters have to ask, who do you trust to have people on staff who see them? Who is going to stand up for them? Social Security and Medicare." Amy Klobuchar also warned that a shift right could spell danger for America. She noted that numerous Republican candidates have sowed doubt over the 2020 presidential election and said that Donald Trump's shadow is looming over key states. Klobuchar added, "These candidates are throwing truth out of the window. They're shattering the rule of law and they're laughing at political violence. If you're a Democrat, if you're an independent or moderate Republican, democracy is on the ballot, and it is time to vote for democracy." New Jersey Democratic Senator Cory Booker voiced similar sentiments. "There's a lot on the line, and we have to remember, after what we saw on 6th of January 2021, Republican or Democrat, we should be electing people that believe in our democracy, that believe in our traditions, and that ultimately want to unite people and not to divide them." New Jersey Democratic Senator Cory Booker was speaking on ABC's This Week program. Agence France-Presse has covered the same story. President Joe Biden pulled out the stops on Sunday to mobilize U.S. voters in defense of democracy, hoping to counter a Republican red wave in this week's midterm elections that could help set Donald Trump on a course back to the White House. "If you all show up and vote, democracy sustained, not a joke," the 79-year-old Joe Biden told a rally in upstate New York, historically Democratic territory, with just 2 days to go until next Tuesday's vote. "This is your generation's moment to defend it, to preserve it, to choose it," Biden told the audience at St. Lawrence University, turning solemn as he recalled last year's assault on the U.S. Capitol by Donald Trump's supporters, who refused to accept defeat. At the southern end of the Atlantic coast in Miami, Florida, Donald Trump held a competing rally in support of Florida Republican candidates. But his own political future was more front and center. Trump said, "I will probably have to do it again." Carrying signs saying, "Again," the crowd yelled back, "Four more years," the length of a U.S. presidential term. Opinion polls in the final stretch put Republicans ahead in the fight for the House of Representatives and also show them gaining momentum in key Senate races as voters seek to take out frustration over four decades' high inflation and rising illegal immigration. Tens of millions of American voters have already cast early ballots, but bringing out the vote on Tuesday will likely prove decisive. With all 435 seats in the House of Representatives up for grabs alongside a third of the 100-member Senate and a slew of state posts, Democrats were putting a brave face on their prospects, but the latest opinion polls have put them on the defensive. "This is going to be a wake-up call to President Joe Biden," predicted Glenn Youngkin, the Republican governor of Virginia, saying his camp was offering common-sense solutions to everyday issues like inflation and crime. U.S. midterm elections are typically seen as a referendum on the president in power, whose party tends to lose seats in Congress, particularly if, as with Joe Biden, the president's approval rating is under 50%. Worryingly for Democrats, a new NBC News opinion poll found that fully 72% of voters believe the country is headed in the wrong direction, 21% who saw it as being on the right track. In swing state of Pennsylvania, Republican Senate candidate Mehmet Oz on Sunday hammered on that message to rile up a crowd at his rally. Mehmet Oz said, "How many of you are worried about America right now?" He asked the crowd in a Pittsburgh suburb, receiving a round of applause.
Food for thought.
Salam, everybody, and how about pondering on a wonderful maxim from the Prophet's infallible heir, Imam Hassan Askari, the 11th Imam, peace upon him. "The worst of people is he who has two faces and two tongues, praises his brother in front of him, and eats his flesh in his absence."
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the effects of faith. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the effects of faith in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that Iman, which is known as faith, it is related to the beliefs that we have. Therefore, it is said by Imam Ali alayhi salam that al-Imanu ma'arifatun bil-qalb. Iman, faith, is something that you acknowledge with the heart and you accept it with the heart. Wa iqrarun bil lisan, and you confirm it with your tongue. Wa amalun bil arkan, and it is the practice of what has come in the Islam. And in the other hadith, he also said aslul iman, the essential of iman or the faith is husnul taslim li amrillah, that we are submissive to all the orders of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. When we practically do something, when we practically practice Islam, then obviously it can be said that this person has become a mu'min, or he has faith, he is faithful. Therefore, there are some effects of iman. And the very first effect which we're going to talk is that when someone becomes a believer and he gets to the status of iman, he gets to the status of iman, he has the feeling of love towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and towards the world, which is taking him near to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So the very first thing is that we can see that the people who are faithful, who has iman, they never commit suicide. They never become depressed. They are not upset. Yes, there are hardships. There are things that comes in their life, but they take it as a trial and they show patience. Therefore, because they are warm, their hearts are warm of the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, therefore, they tackle all these things very easily. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the effects of faith in the Islamic lifestyle. And therefore, we mentioned the first effect, that the one who is faithful, who has reached to the level of iman, he basically is the one whose heart is warm with the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And therefore, he knows the love of Allah. How is it? The second effect is that he has a peace of, like, the peace, the spiritual peace, we can say, the peace in his spirit and in his body. His body feels peaceful when he is reached to the iman. Why? Because when he performs something, he knows that I'm doing this for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He avoids to perform bad deeds. He avoids the evil. And even if in some case he is committing a sin and he has done it, he immediately performs, seeks forgiveness from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He repents to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Therefore, he knows the way that by mistake, if he has committed a sin, how to ask for forgiveness from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, this brings peace for his spirit. He is close to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The way it is said in the Quran that Allah bi dhikrillahi tatma'innul qurub, in chapter Ra'ad, verse number 28. Allah, let it be known that in the remembrance of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, there is a peace, tatma'innul qurub, it is a peace for the heart. Therefore, his heart is full of peace and he is always in the state of peace. He does not need to go to exercise something, maybe like, you know, in today's world, in order to get the spiritual peace, people go for yoga, they go for other kinds of things. and they try to have exercise. Yes, exercise is necessary for the body, and that gives strength to the body. But on the other hand, for the spiritual peace, when you're connected to God, when you're connected to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then obviously this connection brings peace to the hearts. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Egypt is marking 100 years since the discovery of a tomb of Tutankhamun, a pharaoh who ruled more than 1,300 years BC.
I was fascinated with the story myself, and every morning in which I was here to pick up our inspector when I was working on a dig in the Valley of the Kings, I would wander around the house trying to imagine what it was like if I had been here in 1922 and could have been a part of that. And now here we are, now that it's restored. I do hope that this will turn into a center of cultural interest for anyone and everyone who wants to visit Egypt and wants to hear more of the story about Howard Carter and the king.
In 1922, British Egyptologist Howard Carter and his team discovered Tutankhamun's nearly intact tomb. That was the start of what became a 10-year project to excavate and conserve more than 5,000 unique artifacts. Tutankhamun's reign lasted barely 9 years in the vast span of ancient Egyptian history. Although his successors tried to erase the king's record from history, the valuable discovery of his tomb has immortalized the boy king.
China is taking the final step in the construction of its Tiangong space station, the second permanently inhabited station in low Earth orbit after NASA's International Space Station. The second and last lab component of the station was launched on Monday. The uncrewed module is called Mengtian, which means dreaming of the heavens. The rocket carrying it blasted off from China's Space Launch Center on the coast of the southern island province of Hainan. The 23-ton Mengtian is an advanced lab and does not have space for sleeping and sanitation. Instead, it has more space to carry payloads for scientific studies. Fan Ping is the chief designer of the project. She says this is a special step towards space research.
I think the Mengtian lab module is quite special, as it is for experiment only, which can be seen as a dedicated studio. There are 13 scientific experiment racks in the module and 37 exposed loading stations outside the module, enabling astronauts to do more extravehicular loading experiments in the future.
The Mengtian module is the last building block of the T-shaped Tiangong station. It has to fly 400 kilometers to join the two-module combination already dispatched into space. Together, the three modules will construct the station, which is designed for a lifespan of at least 10 years.
It's always a tricky task to remember people's names at a party, but not in this particular gathering in Tokyo, where all the guests had the exact same name, Hirokazu Tanaka. 178 Hirokazu Tanakas came together on Saturday to set a new namesake gathering world record. Their ages spanned from 3 years old to 80. The Guinness World Record for the largest gathering of people with the same first and last name previously belonged to Martha Stewart. 164 people with that name came together in New York in 2005. In the Tanaka's gathering, every man was assigned an alias inspired by their hobbies, occupation, or favorite foods to tell them apart from others. One nicknamed by his birthplace says, "It's strange to meet so many people with the same name." Obviously.
It's a strange feeling to know that there are nearly 200 people with the same name. To be honest, I'd presume there are more popular names out there like Suzuki and Sato. This achievement is really because of the efforts of our organizer.
The man who organized this gathering is a 53-year-old Hirokazu Tanaka who has worked for years to make this happen. He says his quest began in 1994 when he stumbled upon news about a baseball prodigy with the same name. After that, he began tirelessly scouring the nation for his namesakes. He then founded the Hirokazu Tanaka campaign that brought the men together and created a strange friendship among them. Thousands of baby turtles have been released into Peru's Amazon basin in an attempt to preserve the rainforest ecosystem. More than 6,000 hatchlings of three endangered species of turtles have been released into lakes and lagoons in Peru to help them repopulate. To make this happen, wildlife officials collected the eggs from their natural habitat and transferred them to artificial beaches until they hatched. The river turtles are considered vulnerable because for many years they have been killed for human consumption or kept as pets. Scientists are currently trying to conserve the Amazon to avoid catastrophic climate change, and Peru has the second largest share of the rainforest after Brazil. Another world record news. This time it has been set in Switzerland. A Swiss railway company has run the world's longest passenger train with a trip on one of the most spectacular tracks through the Alps. To celebrate its 175th anniversary, Switzerland's rail industry launched the world's longest ever passenger train, measuring around 2 kilometers. The electric train took almost an hour to cover around 25 kilometers over the UNESCO World Heritage Albula line in eastern Switzerland. The Albula line is famous for its endless swooping curves and steep descents. Rail enthusiasts lined the valley to watch the train's 100 cars snake through the Alps. Belgium and the Netherlands were the previous record holders for the world's longest passenger train. They used standard railway through the flat landscapes.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
If you enjoy street art, then you'll probably like Iztapalapa district in Mexico's capital city. Nearly 300 neighborhoods in this area are beautifully painted with brightly colored murals for all to enjoy. Visitors can also ride a cable car and take a tour of the art from above. The district is home to nearly 7,000 murals and graffiti painted on all sorts of surfaces, including rooftops. Iztapalapa Murals is a project that was promoted by the Mexico City's mayor in 2018. The goal of the project was to recover and dignify public spaces through art and involve neighbors in its creation and conservation. Iztapalapa is one of the poorest municipalities in the capital, and the initiative aims to reduce neighborhood violence through public lighting of the murals during the night.
Thank you.
It is never too late to learn a new skill. That's what 100-year-old Nada Rudan has shown with her art when she discovered her love for painting at the age of 87. The Bosnian native says she started to paint to keep herself busy, and now she finds the days are often too short to fit in everything she wanted to do. The artist paints for 3 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon without glasses. Rudan marked her 100th birthday with an exhibition of all the works that she has painted over the years.
My 100th birthday, I've celebrated it at sea. That was really a big event for me. Before that, I had an exhibition that I didn't hope for. But my children persuaded me. I was against it. I'm not an artist. I said, children, don't embarrass me.
She says she's inspired by nature and her travel around the globe. Rudan has lived in numerous areas such as Central America, Hawaii Islands, Europe, and the Asian Himalayas, among many other places. The artist survived both World War II and the siege of Sarajevo by Bosnian Serb forces. Iran's Kish Island is known as the paradise of the Persian Gulf. Our correspondent Yusuf Jalali has been to the stunning southern Iranian resort island and has filed this report about its beautiful attractions.
It's snowland at the heart of a scorching but amazing island. This snow town is one of the latest entertainment centers in Iran's Kish Island in the Persian Gulf. Every year, some 2 million visitors from inside and outside Iran visit the island to enjoy its attractions, from its entertainment centers to its stunning beach.
The beach and the pier in Kish are really peaceful and tranquilizing. It's the third time I'm visiting the island, and I went parasailing, water skiing, and I'm planning to go scuba diving.
Kish Island offers all kinds of sea entertainment activities, from scuba diving to sailing, and oh yes, flyboarding. Besides sea sports, visitors can enjoy its amusement parks and a range of leisure activities inside the island. And if you're a tireless window shopper, Kish is a land of malls and shopping centers.
Kish is an amazing island. It used to be an abandoned island some 3 decades ago, but today it is a luxurious tourist resort with modern buildings and exciting recreational places.
Despite all the pleasure one can have in Kish, the island still has many shortcomings. The major issue annoying visitors is the poor accommodation services.
Hotel facilities and services are a bit weak given the large number of tourists that visit this island. They need to pay more attention to the accommodation infrastructure.
Just a few hundred kilometers away from Kish, there's a tourist magnet in the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, which absorbs the chunk of foreign tourists. While U.S. sanctions on Iran are a major factor to blame for Kish lagging behind in its rivalry with Dubai, the island's officials believe it still has a chance to win the game of tourism against Dubai.
If we want to excel, it is not going to be a tough job. We need to work on 2 major areas. The first is the infrastructure, and the second is regulations that would allow tourists or investors to easily come to Kish to entertain themselves or do business.
Situated off the southern coast of Iran in the Persian Gulf, Kish is one of Iran's free trade zones. Foreign travelers do not need a visa to visit the island, as travel permits are issued on arrival by Kish officials and are valid for up to 14 days.
With its mesmerizing nature and eye-catching urban landscapes, Kish has earned the title of the Bride of the Persian Gulf. Its authorities say the island is already a hub for Iranian travelers, but they say they seek to turn it into a regional tourist magnet. Yusuf Jalali from Kish Island.
A 78-year-old artist is making a comeback with a unique art installation on Governor's Island in the United States of America. One of its biggest features is the sound and creaking of moving chains.
There's a project that I proposed for a commission in St. Louis. The site of the commission was the area near the Mississippi River and the St. Louis courthouse. So I wanted to do a piece that addressed those areas and the subjects. And and of course we have in those areas the Mississippi River, which is a place that you talk about the history of American commerce, but also we can talk about the history of slavery.
Charles Gaines wanted to highlight the role slavery played in building the economy of the United States. That's why he purposely used chains, and the sculptor pointedly faces the Statue of Liberty in New York City. The installation is roughly 30 meters long and activated by colossal chains that rotate on anchors. The installation is part of a three-chapter series called The American Manifest, Moving Chains. It will be kept for all to see until the summer of next year.
A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out three patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Opinion polls in the United States are suggesting a late surge in support for Trump-endorsed nominees who have embraced his lie about election fraud. Many believe that a Trump victory in the midterm elections would tighten his grip on the Republican Party. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. The BBC has more for us. The final opinion polls of the midterm elections are out and can help give us an answer to the question on everyone's mind: who will win, Democrats or Republicans? Indications are that the Republican Party is on the verge of taking back control of the US House of Representatives for the first time in the past 4 years. The upper chamber of Congress, the Senate, remains too close to call. There are more paths to a Republican victory in the Senate than for Democrats, who have held the barest of majorities there for the past 2 years. Understanding how it could unfold in both chambers is just a question of mathematics. In the House, Republicans need to flip only 5 seats out of the 435 in the chamber to have a majority. According to the Cook Political Report, which analyzes the competitiveness of races based on polling data and underlying election dynamics, Republicans are favored in 212 seats. They would have to win just 6 of the 35 races listed as top-ups to control a majority. 10 of those seats are already held by Republicans. The 100-seat Senate is somewhat simpler to understand. Only 35 seats are up for election this year, and there are only a handful of closely contested races. A net change of just one seat towards the Republicans will swing the chamber to them. Given that Democrats are trying to protect more seats than Republicans, there are simply more ways for Democrats to lose the Senate than to win it. That gives the Republicans the upper hand, albeit by the narrowest of margins. It appears likely that Republicans will control at least one chamber of Congress once the dust has settled on these midterm elections. After 2 years of unified Democratic control in Washington, the power dynamic in the nation's capital is poised to shift. Here are 4 very real implications for American politics for the next 2 years. Although it unfolded in fits and starts, after 2 years in office, Joe Biden and the Democrats were able to enact a fairly substantive legislative agenda. It included massive spending on the environment, on healthcare, and other social programs. But all of that will end with a Republican victory on Tuesday, 8th of November. There's the chance of bipartisan cooperation on some issues. For instance, Republicans and Democrats did join together to pass gun control and technology investment legislation this year and infrastructure spending last year. However, the kind of big-ticket liberal priorities on abortion, education, and voting rights will be dead in the water. Republicans have their own legislative agenda, with particular focus on border security, law enforcement spending, budget cuts, and fossil fuel extraction. Even if they take both chambers of Congress, Democrats will be able to block passage in the Senate using the filibuster rule, or in the White House using Joe Biden's veto power. The British newspaper The Guardian has more for us. The spectre of Donald Trump's imminent declaration of a new White House run looms over races in several key states. Ahead of Tuesday, 8th of November's midterm elections, with the former president poised to seize on any success for ultra-conservative candidates as validation for his 2024 presidential campaign. Opinion polls appearing to reflect a last-minute surge of support for Donald Trump-endorsed nominees in a number of crucial congressional and governor's contests came as the former president appeared at a rally for the Republican Senator Marco Rubio in Florida on Sunday. Heaping praise on an incredible slate of true MAGA warriors, Trump cited his Make America Great Again political slogan. Some of his preferred extremists, including Kerry Lake in Arizona, Herschel Walker in Georgia, and J.D. Vance in Ohio, have erased Democratic leads to reach Election Day as favorites, according to the polling website 538. Other Trumpist Republicans who once trailed by double digits, including the Senate candidates Mehmet Oz in Pennsylvania and Blake Masters in Arizona, have closed to within touching distance, giving their party hope of recapturing the chamber and providing Donald Trump a significant lift as he prepares to declare his third run for the Republican presidential nomination. If this is a big night for Republicans, and they think it's going to be, that will be a major, major victory for Donald Trump, and his followers will be greatly energized, said David Gergen, a White House advisor to 4 presidents. If they come up with anything like that kind of victory, if they turn 2 or 3 of the seats in the Senate, they control the House, it's going to be hard to stop Trump within the Republican Party. He will be, in effect, the very likely nominee. Most of the so-called MAGA candidates have amplified Trump's lie that his 2020 election